Welcome to the Full Frontal Living Podcast. I'm Lisa Carpenter, master life coach to driven, ambitious humans who want more out of life without having to sacrifice themselves to achieve it. I'll share how it's possible to slow down, take better care of yourself, find more peace and ease, create sustainable energy, stop procrastination and overwhelm, and fall in love with your life, your business, and your body. This podcast is for you if you're ready to learn what it takes to thrive as a high performer, do less but achieve more, make you and your well-being a top priority, and create your extraordinary life. I'm so glad you're here. Hey, hey, listeners, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Full Frontal Living Podcast. And I'm excited to have Erica McKay with me today from Niche for Design. We are going to be talking about how your environment impacts your well-being, your health, your productivity. I believe it's a topic that not many of us dive into, and it's a really big part of my work. So I'm really excited to have Erica here. So before I go off talking, which is what happens, Erica, can you please properly introduce yourself to everybody, let them know who you are and how you support people out in the world?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you, Lisa, for having me today. I'm excited to get to chat with you. So I'm a commercial interior designer, and that's kind of where my interest in the built environment comes from. But I've always had an interest in how the spaces we spend time on in have an impact on us, the way that we feel, how productive we are. And literally since I was a child, I've been obsessed with like, how do we optimize a space and make it better and work better? Sort of a strange thing for a kid to be into, but I legitimately was interested in that. And so eventually that evolved into a career in interior design and a focus specifically on workspaces, as well as something called the WELL Building Standard. So I'm a WELL AP, meaning I'm certified in this standard, and I'm also a member of the International WELL Faculty Program. So all of that just to say that that's an area we really focus on. It's like, what are the things that we can do in the built environment to not only make it look good, and that's important, but to make it really support us in terms of ergonomics, in terms of acoustics, the things we see in our view and all of that. And there's so much science to support how that's important. So that's kind of my focus area. So that's the area my business focuses on as well.
Okay, so that's what I want to know more about, because I know that many of us, we think about our environment and how it impacts us, but we don't really think about it. So even today, full disclosure, I probably have been ADHD my whole life, fully self-diagnosed. I did the Google search. Anyways, but there's a lot of signs that point towards it. And as I've gotten older, I've definitely noticed my symptoms kind of ramping up. But one of the things that I noticed about myself, even from a really young age, that clutter kind of surrounded me. And as I've gotten older, I've started to recognize how much clutter impacts me. And I've talked about this on previous episodes, right? So before we went live, I'm like, God, I'm looking at my desk. I've got like 5 empty cups here. And which is not the best setup for me when I'm about to do interviews or teach masterclasses, because cluttered desk often reflects cluttered mind. So can you talk to us a little bit about the science of our environment and how it impacts our health and well-being?
Yes, for sure. Clutter is a big one and a common one that impacts people. Obviously, if we're talking about a corporate office versus our home office, we might have more or less influence on how to change that. But certainly, looking at how we keep our space clear and specifically what's in our immediate view. There's also a lot of science. So really all of this comes down to a combination of utilizing the space for stress mitigation. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole bunch of data to support how being able to see outside, for example. So talk about your view, instead of looking at a cluttered mess and a bunch of cups, being able to see out into nature, even just in your peripheral view, has a significant impact on how our brain reacts to stress, how we're able to recover, and how we're able to function throughout the day. It's amazing. And then the other piece of it, which can tie back to stress, but is kind of a separate thing too, is about connection. So this relates more so, of course, in a corporate environment than a home office, but that's kind of the reason why offices still exist today, right? Most of us work remotely, at least some of the time, and that's great. But the piece of of what ends up being missing there is connection. So we're looking at how do we create spaces that help our teams mitigate stress, whether they're at home or at the office, ideally both, and how do we create spaces that facilitate connection rather than just giving them a chair to sit in and do their work. So that's right. Really the main categories we're kind of looking at.
So COVID must have flipped the table on this, because for so many of us, I mean, I've been working from home forever. I'm like an OG on Zoom. I should have bought shares back in the day, right? So I've been at home for a long time. It's taken me a long time to kind of set up my space. But you know, when COVID hit, because everybody had kind of moved, at least from what I understand in corporate, there was a lot of like these open air environments, a lot of connection. And then all of a sudden connection became this like life-threatening, almost like a life-threatening thing. So how has that impacted where we are now? Like, how are we defining office space today post-pandemic versus pre-pandemic? And what are some of the trends that you're seeing around that?
So it really feels like as an industry, we've come full circle. And what's interesting about that is a lot of what we could say are the trends now are what we're starting a little bit before the pandemic. And it was almost as if that entire era just catapulted us forward a decade.
Really?
In a matter of months or whatever it was. And so what we're seeing happening now, so first of all, lots of people still work from home. I think the wellness standpoint still resonates. We actually created a course called the Wellness Workspace that speaks to that directly. It's like actionable things that people can do home or corporately to make their space better support them. I think during the pandemic, people were trying to make some changes like that, but it was difficult because no one really knew how long it was going to last. So everyone sort of felt like they were just waiting to see how the chips were going to fall, so to speak. And in the corporate offices, we did see for a moment, like we had kind of gone to open offices, the pandemic sort of put people back to closed offices because we were scared to connect. And now we've come back to full circle, whereby a lot of companies are rethinking what it even means to have an office space. And what's cool about that is what I'm seeing, and I'm seeing this data from CBRE, the real estate people that are coming out and talking about how it's becoming a quality over quantity conversation. So 75% of offices in the US, I just recently read a study, are planning to downsize this year.
Oh, interesting.
However, at the same time, other data is coming out saying most of the office space that is being rented well is class A or even A plus, meaning good quality office space, sometimes well certified, even for example. So it's no longer about we need X square feet for X people. It's more a conversation of we need a place that supports the things our team does logically in person. So the office, for some companies, it's just meeting and training space is really what they need primarily. For a lot of companies, it's that and maybe some sort of hot desking version that can support certain kinds of team activities that happen periodically with their team. So it's just completely flipped everything on its head. And I think the companies that are paying attention to that are really well positioned to be able to more optimally utilize the space they're paying for. Because otherwise, it's a waste. What's the point of paying for an empty office, right? You need to be paying for a space that supports connection for your team, because that's the piece they need to do in person.
So that's really interesting, right? Because what I'm hearing you say is we're seeing a lot more of this hybrid where people are working at home, but then they're coming into an office, and that office is a space of connection. So even if people are doing Zoom calls, right, it's having that one-on-one time, or, you know, 15, 20, however many people are coming into the office to connect in a deeper way over whatever it is they're doing, but that people are also supporting home environments, home offices to work.
Yeah. And this is becoming so prevalent. This is really fascinating, but obviously there's lots of companies, global companies that have been decidedly remote the entire time. So many of those larger companies have even taken the time to do some research of their own about, so we're hearing that it's valuable for people to be in person to connect certain times. Like it means they're forging stronger bonds and so forth, and that can be valuable. So they started trying to find out, like, what is that sweet spot? How often do they need to be in person? What kind of things do they need to be doing? And what we're seeing is some of those fully remote companies with teams all over the world are going to such an extent that they'll bring their whole team together on whatever continent, sometimes rotating or something, for say a week of the month, or 2 weeks every 6 months or something of that nature to give them the opportunity to do that bonding and have certain activities taking place in person.
Even with that though, that's got to be way more cost effective than having a huge leasehold space with offices. And are they seeing people are more productive when they're being allowed, given permission to work from home versus being in an office space? I'm just really curious about that.
I think it depends. I've read a ton of different studies on this. And I think generally speaking, the consensus is there's no negative correlation to productivity in people working from home, generally speaking. I'm sure there are exceptions to that. It's a little bit of an individual thing, what motivates us and so forth. But there's different ways of measuring productivity versus being able to look over someone's shoulder and seeing what they're doing. I mean, my team, for example, we work fully remotely. We have lots of metrics that we follow that help us determine how productive we are and how successful we are at our job. Where they're doing it makes no difference. Even if we're sitting all side by side, I'm not going to be sitting there staring at them all right. What they're doing anyways, right? So
I like to think the days of micromanaging people have ended, but you know, I'm sure it still exists in some companies. But you know, I know for me, because you know, as I said, I've been working from home for years and years now. If I didn't leave the house to go to the gym, I'd never see anybody. And I've also had to look at how that's impacted my well-being. So it's not even necessarily, you're going to laugh at this. It's not even that I necessarily want to talk to people at the gym. I just need to be around other humans in real life doing things, right? Like in person and not on a screen, even if it's just a smile, a nod, a, you know, whatever it is. I think it is so important that we are still getting out and connecting, regardless of if we're working from home. So what I am really curious about is if so many people are working from home now, so we're going to assume that people have a dedicated space in their house for their work. What are some major, like, don't ever do this if you're working from home, versus what are the things that people really should be looking at to create a well environment if they are working from home?
Yes, for sure. So I think there's more things to do than not do. Although I will say don't sit at your dining room table would probably be a good baseline of where to start. Although I did that for a long time, truly, at the beginning of the pandemic.
I will also say don't work in your bed. Yes. Significantly messed up my sleep patterns from, because, you know, just because I have a laptop and I can work anywhere. What I realized was working on from my bed, which was, you know, fantastic in some ways. When I'd go to try and sleep at night, I couldn't sleep because my body was like, but we're at work. And it took me a while to unravel that. So I really had to create a space that was outside of my bedroom.
That is a big one. Our brain at a subconscious level makes associations with the spaces we're in and what the function of those spaces are. So absolutely, without even realizing it, we can kind of mix ourselves up by doing that. But in terms of what people really need to be thinking about, so the first thing is ergonomics. And I feel like so often when I say that to people, I kind of get an eye roll of like,
yeah,
so
I'm like, what? Tell me what that actually means. Like, what does ergonomics mean?
I think the first thing people think I mean is they need to go buy a super expensive chair and whatever.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, is this like a really ugly chair that I have to buy to sit in, Erica?
And no, I mean, yes, you do need to, that is a good place to start, as a decent quality chair, but truly most chairs that are height adjustable and have some arms for most people is a pretty good baseline that it's going to be okay. The bigger thing is looking at your positioning. So the reason why height adjustable, for example, is important is it's important to try to have your legs at your knees at a 90 degree angle. Lots of different ways to get there. Ideally, you have a height adjustable chair and table that you can do that adjustment. If you're short, like I am, that's the only way to get the table to the right spot. However, you also could look at putting a footrest underneath you, or even a box or a few books or something under your feet, so that you're not putting that pressure on your legs in the way that you're sitting. It seems like a little thing, but we're sitting a lot, right? So it can be impactful. Similarly, we want to try to make sure that our arms are at like 90 degrees as much as possible. So keyboard trays, as much as they can be annoying, are really good for that purpose, especially if our desk isn't adjusting to the right height. The other one that we see a lot.
I'm just going to interrupt. What does that prevent?
It has to do with carpal tunnel primarily and similar ailments. Yeah. The other one is neck. Like people sitting at desks often talk about neck issues. That's super common, myself included in some cases, truly. And so the ideal scenario is that you're always working in a spot where you've got your height adjustable desk and your keyboard and your computer screen's at eye level. It's not always going to be the case if you're on laptops and so forth. If you're on a laptop, though, you can either get a stand to elevate the screen of your laptop and at least be on a separate keyboard, even if it's not a keyboard tray, or really easy fix. Again, I love books. Just put a couple books under there and lift it up to eye level. And then that goes a long way. That was one of the first changes I made during the pandemic when we were working from home, is just found myself a separate keyboard and elevated my laptop a little bit. And that made it, and the footrest thing, because I'm very short.
Well, yeah, I literally have my feet on a yoga block because I think we're both the same height, right? Like I'm 5'1", you're about 5'1" or 5'2". Yeah, like we're both miniature. But these are really good points because although, you know, our bodies are always adapting, right? Our bodies will always adapt to whatever situation we put them in. Over time, though, you will notice those adaptations and you won't particularly like them, right? Like back pain, shoulder pain, neck pain. These are all things that really impact people and impact their wellness later on in life. So you might be like, you know, crushing it at 30 or 40, but when you hit 50 or 60, all those hours in not positioned properly in front of your keyboard will take a toll on your physical body.
And it's unnecessary stress. It's one of those things people sometimes think, oh, well, I'm not going to invest. I'm not going to spend thousands of dollars on this setup. You don't necessarily need to get that complicated with it to make an improvement, right? So that's a big one, ergonomics. Another one is biophilic design. So
these fancy words, Erica.
I know, like,
right? This is like a new word for me. Okay, what is that? Tell us what that
is. I feel like that's one of those words that in my head everyone must know about, but I realize people don't necessarily know what that means. And essentially, it has to do with our connection with nature. And so in the most simplest of terms, it's often that we try to get plants into a space. We know that plants have a huge impact on air quality, which is good for health and productivity in general, helps us feel alert and energized, helps improve the humidity in a room, which is good for virus, reducing virus transmission, for example. And there's also a psychological aspect to that. Going back to what I mentioned before about view, like being able to see nature in our peripheral, whether it's the trees out the window or a plant on your desk, there actually is a biological thing that happens to us that is really positive. So having a plant on your desk, or even worst case scenario, a picture of nature can be helpful. It truly, I mean, we've done offices in basements where like you can't put a window in here. And no plants are going to survive. Although usually there are some species you can get to survive with artificial light. Point being, sometimes you have to get creative. You're in a basement and you're working with the space you're working with, but it doesn't mean you can't do something to make it still help.
Would an artificial plant, because nowadays there are some artificial plants that look like really real. And for people like me who tend to kill plant, although this Ziva plant behind me, it just won't die. I just keep turning it around. It keeps leaning towards the light. It's quite funny. But do artificial plants do the same thing just because of what they tell our, like they signal to our brains that it's outside?
Some of the same things. You're not getting the advantage of it cleaning your air and that kind of thing. But versus not having any reference to nature, yeah, for sure. It would be better to have an artificial plant than no plants. It would be better to have a picture of a plant even than no plants.
Got it. So it's important to try and bring something from outside inside is what you're saying, because that helps our emotional well-being as well.
Absolutely.
I can see that. I've often wondered how people like x-ray technicians or like ultrasound people, I know you have a little one. I've had my aren't so little anymore, but I'm like, my God, you spend all day, every day in the dark. And how must that impact them? So even we were talking before we went live about, you know, we're both in Canada and the days are short in the winter and I have a window, and even being able to see blue sky, mostly gray sky in the winters, is still helpful for me to be able to see the outside in terms of my emotional well-being.
Oh, absolutely. And I think because we don't always have full control of the environment we need to be in, perfect example, medical people, x-ray technician, for example, that's where it's about looking at what are the opportunities to put yourself into a restorative space when you can't always spend all of your time in a space that supports you in an optimal way. We've talked about this even with people. We talked about this recently with a psychotherapy clinic, whereby they're in spaces that maybe are designed to feel good, but there's a really heavy energy in them sometimes at the end of a session, for example. And so in those kinds of situations, whether it's that you're in a space that's not supportive or a space that just has not great energy at certain points, how do you create opportunities for yourself to get outside of that and then go into an environment that helps you to kind of recuperate, restore, and then go back to whatever you need to be doing, the x-ray room or what have you.
Awesome. Is there any way you can refresh your space without, so we've got the plants covered, but is there anything that you do energetically to refresh space? I know this is a little bit maybe on the, like, what people would call the woo side, but I kind of buy into that, right? The energy of homes. I know I've walked into environments before and been like, ooh, abort mission. This does not feel good. So is there anything that we can do to kind of cleanse our space or cleanse the energy in our space?
Yeah, this is totally just speaking on a personal level what I find works. I know of no science behind this per se, but I find even in the wintertime, like, open a window. If you can't open a window, open the door, get a fan going. Like, there's something about just letting air circulate a little that I find is really helpful for that.
Yeah, I
think that's kind of the biggest one, is just get things circulating a little bit if you can. And sometimes lighting a candle or something just to get the essential snow.
I've got essential oils burning in the background. And sometimes for me, you know, you can take this and use this with your clients, Erica. They'll think you're crazy a little bit. But, you know, in terms of energy, sometimes I literally just will visualize or picture this, like, golden light kind of coming through my space, washing all, like, let's just get all the stale energy out. Because that intentional cleansing of our energy, and I talk to my clients about this in, you know, when they're in the shower, if they've had a long day with clients or the kids were driving them crazy or their partner was driving them insane or whatever it is, when you get in the shower, to just visualize that the water is washing all that energy off of you, because how we set our intention has a really powerful impact on our energy and our spaces too. So it's fascinating, the actual, like, science-based, because obviously I don't have any literature to back up what I'm saying. It's just how it makes me feel. But the science-based things like plants and proper ergonomics and being able to see outside, and some of the energetic things that we can do as well that create wellness. And there's no right or wrong, because everybody gets to create the space that feels good for them ultimately. So what else can we do in our space other than, like, you know, declutter, which is a massive one for me that needs to happen yet again. What else can we do in our spaces to create better productivity and better wellness?
Yes. So this is rooted in the most common complaints we hear in corporate offices, but I firmly believe that this applies very much to wherever we choose to work. And it's about distractions. Not just mitigating them, because sometimes they're good, but about managing them and being able to kind of understand when they're helpful and not. And so the one that we hear most often in an office environment is acoustic distraction, especially in an open concept office, depending on the kind of work people are doing. That's why people put on headphones when they work in an office. So really being mindful of where it makes sense to have loud things happening and where it doesn't. Similarly, at home, thinking about where you're setting up your dedicated space that you're going to be working, and understanding how critical it is based on the work you are doing there to be able to avoid distractions. Like, do you need to be in a fully quiet room? Or maybe that's less productive. Maybe you're better off being somewhere where there is a little bit of energy and people around and things happening, because that helps you to feel more energized as well. So being really strategic about where you need to be positioned. This is one of the reasons why I love free address offices, meaning a space where there's no dedicated desks and you kind of just go in and work where it makes sense. Because for most of us, it kind of depends on the day and what you're doing. So in those environments, you kind of have the choice to think about what kind of environment is going to support you best in that day. So that's a big one, acoustical. Other distractions too, the visual distractions. People forget about this one a lot. Exact same scenario. What are you seeing in your peripheral? And is part of that people walking by all day long or a cars going by all day long? That can be extremely distracting, usually not in a great way for people. And the third one is smell, which people very rarely think about until they're experiencing it, but it can be a big one too. Are you beside the kitchen and are people cooking all these different foods all day long, whether at home or in the office?
So there's so, and every single person is unique in terms of what they need. So, you know, I know for me, if I have a day where I have to do a lot of writing, I actually need to be in a space where there's more noise because it helps me focus. Like a coffee shop, super productive for me, but not great if I've got client calls. Obviously, I can't do those from a coffee shop. So I've had to learn that, right? And that sometimes I need to put on focus music to calm my brain. So anybody who has, you know, ADHD, this can be, we actually need things to kind of keep part of our brains occupied so that we can focus on the things that we need to focus on. Boundaries for when you're at home. So, you know, as women, correct me if I'm wrong, if this is your life is different than mine, but we have so many different responsibilities. There's so many things that we need to be productive in. So a big part of, you know, my home office is when the door is closed, I'm at work. And as soon as I walk into my office and I close the door, it doesn't matter about the dishes in the sink, the laundry that needs to be done, the vacuuming, none of that matters because when I walk in here, I am at work. And when I leave the office at the end of the day, I am done at work. So it's not a like going back in and going back out. But it took me a long time to get really clear on those boundaries for myself because they support my well-being long-term. And often people working from home, they don't have boundaries around their work time and their home time. So they're constantly like context switching, which is ineffective and it's not productive. It's actually an energy like drainer when you're trying to run a business out of home. So those are some things to be super mindful of as well.
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons why a lot of people say they do want to go to the office sometimes is because that being able to disassociate from where they were in terms of environment and be in a different space is helpful for them. And it's a different energy going back to our conversation about what we associate energetically with a different environment. It's an opportunity to change that up as well. So
absolutely. Yeah. I would guess, again, based on zero research that I've done, that working from home is often more challenging for women than it is for men because of all the associations that we have and the beliefs we have around the things that we should be doing. So, you know, when you go to the office, your job is to do your job. But if you're working at home, your job is to do your job. And you've got this whole other job out there. And that is a really, for many of my clients, that's something that they really have to learn and adopt. Like these, like I said, these personal boundaries around work time, workspace, and their home environment. And I'll tell you this really cute story of, so some clients don't have dedicated workspaces and they have kids. So way back in the day, I got this idea. Do you remember in Harry Potter when he had the invisibility cloak?
Yes.
You remember this, right?
Yeah.
So I have clients where we've had to teach their children that when they're wearing whatever it may be, and I've got one client who wears a crown, she puts on a crown. And her kids know that that is her invisibility cloak. So when she is wearing that, whether she's journaling, meditating, working, or whatever, her kids know that's like, it's like the scarf tied on the door, right? When you had a roommate, like, don't come in. She's taught her kids that that's, she's busy doing her thing, her work thing, when she's wearing her crown. And her kids have even learned that they have their own special things. And when they put those on, that's their personal boundary to tell their mom that, you know, they don't want to be disturbed, right? So teaching ourselves about boundaries when it comes to our environment and our kids, right? So again, you know, feel free to pass that on to your corporate clients if they want to wear crowns, if they're in their open air office and they don't want to be disturbed. You're just like, hey, I talked to this coach. Let's get you a crown for your environment, right?
I love that.
Right. We can make it super fun. I don't think everything around our environment needs to be so serious or perfect. Like we can create whatever type of space we want. I think what you're really saying though, is to be intentional about the space you're creating so that it makes you feel the way you want to feel. so that you stay well over the long term.
Yeah. And realizing that it's probably different spaces sometimes, just like you saying you go to the coffee shop sometimes because that supports you better. I used to love working at the airport, which everyone I have ever said that to thought was insane. But it was something about the energy there. And it was mainly for things like writing, like what you're talking about. I just found it really motivating. And I don't know, the people moving around or something about it just always felt really inspiring and motivating to me.
I love airports.
Yeah, they're
I
great.
I love airports. I think they're great. And planes are also awesome places where I find I'm like super productive. Like give me Wi-Fi and a plane and I'll write a book. Like it's amazing. So I think part of it is, you know, breaking out of this box that many of us have put ourselves in around what the ideal workspace looks like and knowing that we can change that space depending on what our needs are. But it also means giving yourself permission to look at what you want and need to be your most productive self instead of saying, you know, I have to sit my butt down at my desk and I have to be there for 8 hours in order to do my job. Well, what if that's not true?
Exactly. And this is the exact approach, exactly what you're saying, is what we'll say smart leaders are taking as an approach to understanding what their team needs as well. And I think this is a big part of why the purpose of the office is changing, to bring that back around full circle, is for exactly that reason. We know now that different types of environments support different people and different purposes. So why would we create a cookie cutter space assuming that's going to be optimal and help you get the most out of your team and your business? It just doesn't work that way. So we understand more about what actually is needed in the space. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And just we've come so far in terms of understanding how many neurodiverse people there are out there. And that, you know, back in the day when I was growing up, it was like, this is how you learn. This is how you sit at your desk. Like, these are the boxes you need to tick, which I obviously never fit into. So it was really challenging for me. But nowadays, we actually understand that different types of people have different needs. Some people are more visual. Some people are more kinesthetic. Some people are more auditory. Some people have ADHD. Some people are very neurotypical, right? Some people don't. It's like, so for an employer, I can see that this type of way of working moving forward is actually going to be way more beneficial because it's going to give all their employees more free range to really tap into what they want and need while still having the option of going into the office environment if the company actually provides that.
Absolutely. And it's more challenging, no doubt. I think that's overwhelming for a lot of leaders to say, well, it was much easier when we could just have 100 cubicles and call it a day.
Right.
But the opportunity there is very different. And I think the fact that we understand that it really is about connection. I've been paying a lot of attention to this recently too, thinking about people I meet in person versus the people I meet virtually. Now, don't get me wrong, I very much appreciate that we have the ability to do things like this across the country and meet virtually, but I know that there is a different kind of connection that we're able to make by meeting with people in person, which is again why these remote companies are choosing to do that. And it has to do with our energy, actually, as much as that can sound really wooey. It is true. And there is understanding of that that's really developing right now. Even I've read about people, companies that are researching about pheromones. This sounds crazy, but seriously. And understanding how, because when we're in person, we're exchanging energy, basically, is the long and short of it. And so it allows us to create different kinds of bonds. Now, does that always matter in every interaction? No. But if you want to build a team that's really well connected, it probably does.
Yeah, it is important. And that, you know, for me, that was one of the big things that was missing over the pandemic years, the inability to connect, right? So you and I actually met at a live event. It was one of the first live events that I'd been to in person for a really long time. And I consider myself more of an introvert. So networking for me, are we even calling it that these days? Anyways, I don't particularly love it. I'm not great at small talk. I like to go deep with people. I like to get to know them. And what I found is being in person with people, like right away, I can read someone's energy. That's just one of my skills. And I know who's for me and I know who's not for me. And it is powerful when you get around people and just it does build deeper bonds and faster connections than when I meet with somebody via Zoom. So again, it's like super grateful that Zoom is one of my environments because I work with women from all around the globe, which is like, I've told this story before, but when, you know, when I was growing up, my job didn't exist when I was in high school. What do you want to be when you grow up? Right. Like it literally didn't exist. The technology didn't exist. So I'm never going to poo-poo this virtual world. However, the opportunity to be in community and in connection with people is so, so important. So even if somebody is setting up a virtual office, I think it's important for them to look at or at least be open to. There's so many things like, I think WeWork though has gone out of business or is going out of business, but there are lots
somebody
of like,
bought them, but yeah,
somebody bought them. Okay. So there are virtual places that are set up for people to go and work remotely.
Yes. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. So co-working is what people often think about like this, the WeWorks of the world and all the others. But really, it's more about flexible workspaces. And so we are seeing an enormous increase in the demand for what we'll call flexible workspaces, meaning they can easily be expanded or contracted. They're likely turnkey, so a company's not necessarily having to go in and invest $1 million to get this office up and running. And in many cases, they're shared in some capacity because it does make sense to work remotely 70% of the time or whatever it may be, but it gives them an environment to come into and do what they need to do in person when it makes sense to do so. Training, events, meetings, collaboration, whatever it is. And so co-working, I think, because of that, is experiencing a real surge in a lot of markets for exactly that reason.
I've even seen, and I don't think it's called Airbnb, but I think there's a new kind of where you can travel specifically to homes that are set up for, you know, these are for entrepreneurs or businesses because they've got higher Wi-Fi. They're set up for more connection and community retreats, all that kind of stuff. It's really fascinating to see how many different environments are available for us now for our work. It's really cool. And I think it does come back to, again, knowing like, what is it that you want and what is it that you need in order to thrive when you are sitting down to be productive, when you're sitting down to do your work, instead of just falling into this trap of, well, this is the way it's always been. This is the way offices have always been, trying out different things, because you might find that your productivity goes through the roof with the right environment, or if you clean up the environment you're in and really get a little bit more intentional around your space.
Absolutely. It's one of those things people don't even think of for the most part. Doesn't even, I mean, obviously it occurs to me because I was somehow wired to be thinking about this all the time. But for most people, they don't even think about where they're sitting. At most, maybe they realize their chair is uncomfortable and try to get a more comfortable chair. But beyond that, it's such an afterthought and a missed opportunity. So I think that's kind of, that's really what our goal is, to just to get people thinking about, how does the space I'm spending time in actually impact my health, my well-being, my productivity, my happiness, all of these things.
You know, we've got so many amazing tools now too, to help us determine that. Like Pinterest is massive, right? Like if you want to know how different environments make you feel, go on to Pinterest and look at different environments and then come back and look at your own environment. And does this make me feel like the Pinterest board that I just set up? So not saying that you could always create what's on Pinterest, but it is a great way to kind of suss out like, well, how do I feel in a minimalistic space? Or how do I feel when there's more plants and more this and more that? Just from looking at pictures, I think that that can inspire us to figure out what it is we want to try or what it is we want to add. And just in talking to you, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I do need more plants in here. And I do need to declutter, and I love my pictures. But what I find, I'm a very kinesthetic person, but I'm also very visual, which is sometimes frustrating because I need to see things to remember them, but it can also get cluttered quickly. So how quickly can I find, you know, how quickly can I clear my space? It's an ongoing thing for me anyways. That's my neurotypical brain that wants to bounce all over the place, right? Like, because my
little clutter is not always bad.
Right. But my giant whiteboard in front of me is not super sexy, but it works for me. But then also on top of the giant whiteboard, Erica, is giant sticky notes too. Right? Like it's my partner would walk in here and he's like, I need to abort. Like, perfect for me. It's not perfect for him, but it's my workspace.
Yeah. So there can be beauty in that too, right? That being able to see that process. And if you are kind of kinesthetic too, it's not necessarily that you do need a minimal space. You just need to feel like it's some version of organized chaos that works for you.
Right. And it is knowing when it's crossed into that place where it is impacting my productivity. And I do need to like declutter, file the papers, because although I can tell myself it's not impacting me, it is, because it's actually a manifestation of what's going on in my mind. So if I've got racing thoughts and lots going on, it's usually reflected in my environment. And I really challenge anybody who's listening to look at their environment and then look at what's going on in their head, because there's often a correlation there that we want to look at. So Erica, how can people work with you? Where can they find you? What type of people are hiring you? Can somebody who has a home office hire you? Are you predominantly working with corporate clients? Like, what are your services and your team look like?
Yeah, so we definitely work predominantly with corporate clients. In some cases, that leads us to being involved in the home office environment. But for the most part, what we're finding is companies that are in that moment of transition that I mentioned before, where they're realizing we have a lot of empty office, this doesn't make any sense, and we're going in and helping them better understand what their team actually needs based on their hybrid operations or however they're trying to function. And then we're helping them to set up a space that really supports that. On the individual level, however, one of the things that that would be good if any of your listeners want to learn more, on our website, if you go to nichefordesign.com/wellnessworkspace, we have a course there that really encompasses some of what we talked about, but goes into a little bit more detail on a really applicable level. What are the elements of a wellness workspace? How do you figure out what they are for you? And what are some easy ways that you can apply them? So that was kind of one of the ways that we've tried to develop something that serves both sides of that equation. So that's a good resource. And we do post a lot about workspace wellness and the impacts of our built environment on our Instagram. We're quite active on LinkedIn as well. So we're kind of all over the place.
Your Instagram is Niche for Design.
Yes.
Correct. Because you have a separate Instagram for you personally.
Yes, I do. I don't use it all that much, but
I know, because I think I've tried to like, I'm like, where am I gonna
we're probably on both.
You're probably on both. Okay, so Niche for Design, is that your Instagram handle?
Yes.
As well. And then nichefordesign.com wellness workspace is your little course to help people who have more of a home space. It has been so awesome talking to you. This has been really valuable and interesting information, because again, you know, environment is such a big part of my work, because everything is about how can we create this sense of wellness and this peace and ease within ourselves. Because I work with people who are, you know, they're successful, they're ambitious, they're driven, and they often don't recognize how much their environment is impacting how they're thinking and feeling about themselves. So hopefully this gives people another perspective so that they can look at their spaces, or maybe go to their employer if they're in a corporate office and say like, hey, we need to look at some things in order to make this a more desirable environment. Because I think nowadays too, even with employers are wanting to keep great employees, an environment is a big part of keeping great employees. Because if the environment sucks, and it's not just the manager you don't like, but if the environment really doesn't feel good for you, people will leave now. Because people know they have options, right? I think after everything so many of us have gone through, well, we all collectively were in it together. It's like, we don't want to waste time in spaces or with people that don't light us up, that don't make us want to, like, you know, jump out of bed in the morning. At least I hope most people are starting to live from that way. Maybe that's just in my little bubble of people. But anyways, Erica, thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed this conversation. Do you have any final words, parting thoughts that you want to leave the listeners with before we wrap this episode up?
Yeah, I'll just say, and to your point about why this is important for companies to think about, I think the big thing that comes up for us over and over again is environments is part of the equation for keeping people, but ultimately connection keeps people. Mm-hmm. And understanding that the environment is such a key portion of how you make that connection and facilitate that connection, that's really where the value lies. It's not about having an office for the sake of having an office. It's probably a cost-saving thing, if anything, because you almost certainly need less office if it's empty. but it's having a space that supports connection. So I think that's kind of the two sides. At home, it's a little more about what supports me as an individual. And at the office, it's what supports connection, because that tends to be where the overlap occurs. So I would encourage your listeners to think about that and how that really impacts them on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I really love that. And I would even probably say that your environment at home supports the most important connection you have. And that's the one to yourself as well, right? That we often overlook. So awesome, Erica. Thank you so much for coming on. I am going to put all of the places where you can connect with Erica will be in the show notes. So by all means, please reach out to her, give her a follow on Instagram. If you listen to this episode, tag us on Instagram and share your takeaways with us. We'd love to hear. And Erica, you and I will be in touch, of course, because you're like this new person in my world that I love. So thank you so much for coming on. I've really appreciated having you here.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It's been a pleasure.